We are in chapter 2 still, though moving along towards the end of it, and specifically dealing with Yoav and Benayahu. Okay, so just to recap what has happened here, I'm not going to go through all of Yoav's background again, but Yoav hears the news, whether the news is that David told Shlomo to take care of him, or whether it's that David has gotten rid of Adoniyahu and he's gotten rid of Aviatar, who was an accomplice. Either way, Yoav panics. I shouldn't say panics, because Yoav doesn't strike me as somebody who panics. Nonetheless, he makes a beeline for the Mizbeach, for the altar. And the text said he had gone with Adoniyahu, he had not gone with Avshalom, and in some sense, that text is meant to demonstrate his guilt, and we have different explanations for what exactly the guilt is, but he goes for the altar, and we said the altar isn't going to work for him, because he was an intentional murderer. I mean, he killed with forethought. And the verse in Shmot chapter 21 tells us that such a person can't be saved by the Mizbeach, by the altar. So either we suggested, Radak brought this, it's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, that Yoav was stalling, he was buying time, he wanted Chaye Sha'ah, to live as long as he could, even just temporarily. A second idea was that no, Yoav was mistaken. He thought the altar would save him. The Gemara in Makos supported that idea. We had a third idea that Yoav had a plan beyond saving himself from death. He knew he wasn't going to save himself from dying, but we suggested that maybe he's doing this to harm Shlomo. He thinks that Shlomo will get in trouble with the people, or maybe even with God for killing somebody in the Mishkan, or he wants to avoid the posthumous consequences of being killed by the king. That's a second possibility. Specifically, there we go. Hold on 1 second. Okay, I'm back again. Sorry, the Zoom clicked out. That's just what it's going to be until the internet comes back here. I apologize. I'm doing the best we can with it. But the second possibility was that he wanted to avoid the consequences of being killed by the king. Specifically, he doesn't want his property to go to the throne. And then third possibility is that he wants to avoid the consequences of being killed by the Beit Din, by the rabbinical court, which is in the Mishkan, according to the Medrash in Bamidbar Rabbah. He's trying to avoid being killed that way because he doesn't want to be buried in the cemetery of the Beit Din. He wants to be killed and buried in his family plot. However I read it, he went to the Mizbeach, he went to the altar, and he grabbed onto the altar, but no, it's not going to save his life. Okay, all of that is a review. That brings us to what Benayahu tries in order to deal with him. So if you take a look at chapter 2, sentences 29 and 30. That's what we're up to. Move forward. Chapter 2, sentence 29. Vayugad Lamelech Shlomo, that's where he sends Benayahu. And sentence 30, Vayavo Benayahu Alo Al Hashem. Benayahu goes to this Mishkan, which is where he is hiding, which is where Yoav is hiding out. Vayomar Elov, and he says, Ko Amar HaMelech, say. He says, the king says, get out of there. Vayomer lo kifo amus. And he says, no, I'm going to die here. That's the response that he gets. Vayashe benayahu es hamelech davar lemor ko diber yoav v'cho anani. So Benayahu goes back to Shlomo and he says, this is the story. This is what Yoav said to me. This was his answer to me. Now what do I do? So the first question you have to ask, and I think we asked it at the end last time, is why is this a conversation? Shlomo's order to Benayahu was, kill him there. He didn't say, talk to him. He didn't say, tell him to leave the Mishkan. Shlomo said, kill him in the Mishkan. What in the world is this about? So the simple read is that Benayahu expects to go through a Beit Din proceeding, and taking the view that the Sanhedrin is not in the Mishkan. The Sanhedrin is not there on site. So he wants him to go out and to be properly tried in court. That's one possibility. However, Barbanel says that's not the story. And I think we mentioned it at the end last time. If you take a look at source number one on your sheet, V'ulai hayadaz ben ayov kavanaso kedei lahavio lifnei shlomo lisnapel olav ulvakesh al atzmo. Did we do that at the end last time? Just nod yes or no? Yeah, we did. Okay, so I'm not going to read out the source again, but just recap it. Barbanel believes that Benayahu has a plan. Benayahu doesn't want to kill Yoav because he knows, Benayahu knows, I'm going the general next. And if I kill him, everybody is going to say that it was my own initiative in order to get power. So I'd rather that Shlomo spare Benayahu. That's what he wants, spare Yoav. So he wants to get Yoav to come before Shlomo and get another chance. That's the way that Abarbanel reads it. Continuing the theme in which we already saw the Gemara view Yoav as a Torah scholar, that we already saw last week, the Gemara also perceives a halachic debate between Yoav and Benayahu here. So that when the text says that Benayahu comes back to Shlomo and he says, this is what Yoav said, and this is what he answered me, it sounds like it's more than just Yoav said, I'm not leaving the Mishkan. It sounds like there was a debate. What was the debate? Take a look, please, at source number 2 and source number 3. First, you have to see source number 2. I put it here on the sheet in case not everybody has a full Tanakh at hand. This is from Shmuel Bet. This story here is Shmuel Bet chapter 3. The scene of one of Yoav's crimes. This goes back to the beginning of King David's reign, after Shaul has died. Shaul has a son, Ishbosheth. Ishbosheth has claimed the throne as well, with the strength of a general named Avner. But Avner defects from supporting Ishbosheth and goes to David. And David accepts him. And then Yoav kills Avner. As part of David's reaction to Yoav killing Avner, see source number 2. Vayishma David me'acharechein. David heard afterwards. He heard after Yoav had killed Avner. Vayomer, and he said, Naki anochi u'mamlachti me'im Hashem arolam midmei Avner bener. I and my reign are innocent regarding the blood of Avner forever. We had nothing to do with this. David wants to make everybody know this wasn't his plan. He accepted Avner in peace. And then he continues to say, Yachulu al Rosh Yoav, ve'al kol beis aviv. He says, may the following befall Yoav and his entire clan. Va'al yikarez mi beis Yoav, and let there never disappear from the house of Yoav a zav. A zav is a man with some kind of genital discharge that communicates impurity. A mitzarat, a person with tzarat. I don't like translating it as leper because it's not leprosy. It's some kind of ailment that can be spiritual but can be physical. Either way, it makes a person an outcast in society. Umachzik bapelech. His descendants will be those who grip the cane, who can't walk. Vinofel bacherev, those who fall by the sword, vachaser lechem, and those who lack food. This is a terrible curse that he issues for the house of Yoav. And on that, the Gemara tells you something fascinating in source number 3. We're going to have to figure out where in the world this comes from. But look at the Gemara. Vayashev ben Ayahu as hamelach davar le'mor kodi ber Yoav v'chol anani. Ben Ayahu reported back to the king saying, this is what Yoav said and this is what he answered me. Omar le, he said to him, Zil emole, you go tell him the following. Who said to whom? Yoav said to Benayahu, you go tell Shlomo the following. Tarte lo save b'hai gavra. Don't do two things to that man. Don't do two things to Yoav. Ikatlis le, if you're going to kill Yoav, kabil lutuse delate avuch, then accept upon yourself the curse that your father issued upon him. Vilo, and if not, Shavke, let him live. Deleku letuse delade avucha, let him live with the curse that your father cursed him. You can't have it both ways. says the Gemara here. That's what Yoav was saying to Benayahu to tell Shlomo. I realize we have a lot of names here and it's easy to get lost. Yoav says this to Benayahu to go tell Shlomo, I'll accept the death sentence, I'll accept the curse. I won't accept both. Now, how do you read that at all into this? We'll come back to it. I want to answer that question, but we're not ready to right now. You'll see eventually, God willing, it'll even be today. But that's what they read into, so said Yoav, and so he answered me. And then there's also a debate regarding the charges against Yoav. Same passage of Gemara, source number 4. Asyu ole Yoav. They brought Yoav, Dine, and he was judged in front of Shlomo. And I think we've already discussed this on some occasions, so I'm not gonna belabor this. But the trial is for the murders that he committed. The first murder that we have is when he kills Avner, the story that we just read about. So Amarle, my time a katal de la Avner. He says, what'd you kill Avner for? Amarle, go al hadam da asoil haboy. He says, I had to. I was the avenger of my brother's blood. Asael was the brother of Yoav, and Avner killed him. Now, in case anyone doesn't remember the story, it's Shmuel Bet, chapter 2, after the split between David and Ishbosheth, there is some kind of a war game that Avner proposes between his forces of Ishbosheth and Yoav's forces of David. It's a story in and of itself. It's worth reading. And what happens in this war game between them is that Yoav's brother Asael pursues Avner. He goes running after Avner. He's very swift. He's a general in his own right. Divrei HaYamim presents Asael as a general. And so Asael goes after Avner. And Avner says, leave me alone, kid. He doesn't want anything to do with him. Go away. And Asael keeps pursuing him. And Avner says, I don't know how I'm going to face your brother if I kill you. Really, go away. No. He says, go attack somebody else. If you attack somebody else, you can save face. Just pretend you weren't going after me in the first place, right? And he says, no, and pursues Avner. Finally, Avner takes his spear, which is double-edged. The front and the back of the spear are sharpened. And he plunges it back behind him into the charging Asael between his ribs and kills him. That's Shmuel Bet chapter 2. So Yoav says, he killed my brother. He killed Asael. So of course I was going to kill him. I'm the avenger of the blood. To which the Gemara continues and says, yeah, but the response is Asael was trying to kill Avner. Avner was justified. He was saving his own life. He tried to dissuade him from coming after him. To which Yoav says, yeah, but he could have stopped him by injuring him. He didn't have to kill him. This becomes a key issue in Jewish law. The question of how much do you have to do to save an attacker without killing him? And is there a difference between if you're a bystander versus if you're the intended target? But the response is, Avner didn't have the opportunity to stop Asael without killing him. To which Yoav says, come on. He was able to plunge this spear into the guy's fifth rib. You think he couldn't have just as easily tripped him up or stopped him in some other way without killing him? And then the discussion goes on. But my point is to show you that we portray Yoav as being knowledgeable in the law, and they're having this whole debate about the charges. Well, Benayahu reports back to Shlomo rather than kill Yoav. And Shlomo says, kill him where he is. Go back into the text, please, chapter 2, sentence 31, where we get Shlomo's soliloquy. He's going to tell you that it's time for Yoav to go. He says, Vayomer lo amelech, Shlomo said to Benayahu, asei kasher diber, do what he said. He said, I'm going to die there? That sounds just right to me. Ufgabo, strike him, ukvarto, and bury him. Remove the blood that he shed in vain from upon me and upon my father's house. He's killed multiple people. We know Yoav killed Avner. We know that Yoav killed Avshalom. We know that Yoav killed Amasa, Avshalom's general who had defected to David. Ve'ishiv Hashem es damo al rosho, and God will return his blood on his head. Asher paga b'shnei anashim tzadikim v'tovim mimenu v'yahargein b'cherev. He struck and killed by the sword two men who were righteous, who were better than him. I'm going to come back to that phrase. That's a loaded phrase. I want to know what you mean when you say they're better than him. Notice Avshalom is not there, by the way. He says specifically two men. We're going to explain in a moment. That's Avner and Amasa. He says, Ravi David lo yada, my father didn't know he was going to kill them. My father was not part of that plan. As Avner ben Ner starts of Yisrael, Avner, the general of Yisrael, of Shaul, and then Ishboshes. Ve'az Amasa ben Yeser starts of Yehuda, and Amasa, who was a general with Yehuda. Notice the Yehuda-Yisrael split, right? This is a constant. Long before you had the split of the kingdoms, this split was already in the offing. So he says, he killed these two great men. You kill him here. And he continues in sentence 33. Vishavu demehem berosh Yoav uberosh zaro leolam. Their blood will be on Yoav's head and will be on the head of his descendants forever. Ula David, ula zaro, ula beiso, ula chiso. And for David, for his progeny, for his house, for his throne, yiyah shalom ad olam meyim Hashem, there will be peace forever from God. This is not going to redound against me. This is not going to be a problem for my house. Yoav earned this. So when he says here, first of all, kill him, he killed these great men. That reminds us of the debate that we had previously. If Yoav really deserves to die for what he did to Avner, what he did to Amasa, why didn't David kill him? Right? So we said, well, there were technical reasons why David wouldn't kill him, because there were no witnesses, because of this, because of that, but he wants Shlomo to kill him. And we had two schools of thought. One school of thought was, yeah, you're killing him because of his prior crimes. The other school of thought was that he's not killing him because of prior crimes, he's killing him because he's a threat to Shlomo. He sided with Adoniyahu, he is going to be a constant threat until you get rid of him. That's the other take. So if I have the simple read here, for mentioning these two deaths, the deaths of Avner and the death of Amasa, I could say, and that's why he should die now. If you take a look at source number 5 on the sheet, Radak says it. Shitmiseyu, kill him. Ki aim with on bazeh. There's no room to argue against this. Sharehu harag, shnei hasarim ba'arma uvizadon. He killed these two leaders, these two generals, with trickery and intent. Uchsev, and the text says, mayim mizbechi tikachen ulamus, even if he's at the altar. You take him and kill him. Ricky, I'm going to ask you to hang on. That's the approach that Radak takes. You're mentioning these two deaths because they are the ones who are responsible. As opposed to Abarbanel. And Abarbanel says it's not kill him because of these two deaths. It's kill him because he is dangerous. Take a look at source number 6 where Abarbanel says that it's not why you're mentioning the two deaths. You mentioned the deaths for a different reason. Abarbanel says, Lo hebi shlomo heina inyan avner va'amasa liyoso atachlis ha'atzmi b'misas Yoav ata. Shlomo doesn't mention Avner and Amasa as the reason for Yoav to die now. Yoav is dying now because he's a threat. Ki im la'agid sh'aya siba me'es Hashem legalgel alav gemulo. He's just mentioning these to say, don't feel bad. He has a rap sheet a mile long. He's been killing people for a long time. Don't you know who this is? You shouldn't feel bad. You shouldn't have second thoughts about what you're doing, Binayahu. That's the idea. There's another medrash, which we're going to see, that's going to give it a different spin to this line. But that's the idea here right now. So again, I want to make sure that we're being clear about this, and I feel like I'm rushing a little bit to compensate for the internet problems I had in the beginning. So let me make sure that I'm stating this clearly. Benayahu tells Yoav to leave the Mishkan. Whether that's his own innovation, whether that's because he thinks it's bad to kill him there, whether it's because he wants to give him another chance. Shlomo is having none of it. Shlomo says he killed these great men. Either he should die because of that, or he should die as a danger. And the fact that he killed these great men is a reason not to hesitate in doing so. Either approach. And then I'm adding, he also said to him, not just kill him, but go back to sentence 31. He said, ukivarto, you should also bury him. What is the emphasis here on bury him? It's kill him. Yeah, we'll take care of burial. Why is Shlomo saying bury him? So I brought you on the sheet in source number 7, 3 different approaches. I just did it as a bullet point. Radak and Abarbanel say it means he's still a great leader. You can't get away from the fact that Yoav was important as a general. Give him a burial with honors. That's one way. Ralbag says, no, Benayahu, remember we learned a couple of weeks ago, is a Kohen. He can't handle the burial. What he's saying is, you strike him, but let other people take care of the burial. That's Ralbag. Honestly, I have a hard time fitting that in the words ukvarto. Ukvarto means bury him. I know, I see Janine with the focus on grammar. It's like, what are you talking about? Ralbag knows grammar better than we do, but I don't know what he's doing here. The third approach, though, would be that this goes back to a Gemara that we saw previously, that we saw last week. We said that Yoav was worried about getting buried in his family plot. And the Gemara says that Hashem says, that Shlomo says, kill him and bury him in his family plot, we suggested. Shlomo's willing to do that. And that's the idea here. It's the Medrash I quoted, Bamidbar Rabbah 23:13. It's saying, let him be buried in his family plot. That's the idea. Okay. One other note, and then I'll take questions, because we've said a lot here. But one other note. They were better than him. Right? Yoav killed 2 men, Avner and Amasa, who were better than him. So what makes them better than him? How do you know they were better than him? So Radak says, well, we don't have any record of them killing innocent people. So, you know, that's fair. That's a valid point. Not killing innocent people makes you better than a murderer. Okay, fair, Radak. However, Radak also has another idea. And for this, you have to go back to the story in the city of Nov. So those who are in my Thursday afternoon shiur will recognize the Rishalmi that I brought here in source number 8 and the Medrash Tehillim I brought in source number 9. The city of Nov is where the Mishkan is during Shaul's reign. David is a fugitive. He goes to the Mishkan and he gets food and a weapon from Ahimelech, who is the Kohen running everything in the Mishkan. He also inquires of the Urim V'Tumim, it appears. Doeg, who works for Shaul, finds out about it, tells Shaul about it for reasons beyond the scope of our Shia right now. Shaul orders the death of Ahimelech and his family. Again, long story. If you want to know more about it, you could download the audios from the Thursday Shia. But Shaul turns to people who are described in the text in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Chafet, Shmuel 1, chapter 22, he turns to men who are described as Ratzim and Nitzavim Alav, people who are runners who stand over him. And he says, go do it. Kill Ahimelech's family. And they refuse. They won't do it. And so Shaul has to go to Doeg, and Doeg does it and does even more. So who is it who dared to refuse that order? Well, if you take a look at source number 8 and source number 9, you find that the rabbis said it was none other than Avner and Amasa. As Yerushalmi puts it, they said to Shaul, "Klum islach aleinan el hadein zunra v'hadein kalinirin. What do you have over us? The Zunra and the Kalinin, which are the badges of their honor in the king's court. That's what you have over us. The fact that you've given us positions of power? Hatrifalach. We give them back to you. We're not killing Ahimelech and his family. We refuse." And the Medrash Tehillim in source number 9 credits it with their mitzvah. So their piety prevented them from going that route. So when we read this in the Thursday class, I asked the question, how in the world does the Gemara, does the Medrash know that Avner and Amasa were the ones who refused to do it? It's a bizarre read. However, now I have an answer. Radak points to our passage here, in which we are told that Avner and Amasa were better people than Yoav. Because Yoav went and killed innocent people, Avner and Amasa were ordered to kill innocent people and they refused. You follow? That's what's underlying this medrash. The brilliant Radak. That's what's underlying the medrash that they didn't do it. So what we see here is that Shlomo says it is time to kill Yoav. I don't care that he's in the Mishkan. Go ahead and do it. He has a long record. That's where we are. Before we see sentence 34, which is important in its own right, I'm just going to pause because I've been talking for a long time now. Questions? Ricky, you had a question before. Yeah.
Yes, I have two. First of all, in sentence 33,
yeah,
Ule David mean?
Yes. So I'm coming back to that when I talk more about the curse on the family. I'm hoping it'll be today, but if not, it'll be the beginning of next week. But yes, I want to get to that. It's a very good point.
Another question is, why is Avshalom not mentioned?
Ah, so this is also an important point. Avshalom isn't mentioned because it's not so clear that Yoav is wrong for killing him. Meaning, David says, don't kill him. But Avshalom is a murderous rebel who tried to take the throne and caused a lot of death in the process. After Avshalom dies, after Yoav kills Avshalom, David is in mourning for his son. And Yoav turns to him and says, you know, it's very demoralizing for everybody. You're grieving for this dangerous man who was the cause of so much death. Yeah, he's your son, but he's also a horrible criminal. So we have the possibility of taking Yoav's side against Avshalom. We don't have that with Avner. We don't have that with Amasa. Okay, Moish.
I've been thinking about the Mizbeach angle for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought of something now, which is this. And this was apparently also done in other cultures. The idea was that the to be convicted or to be executed person had gone to the Mizbeach. And the idea was, are you acting purely when you're trying to kill me? And I would suggest that what Yoav was doing was saying, this is, what you're doing is simply political. It has nothing to do with my actual righteousness or not. And that's what he was showing to people.
Mm-hmm.
Are you pure or not? And people saw this as a political act. Or so he argued.
So it's an interesting idea for sure, and I did see the article that you once sent me about it. I hope you also saw the article that I had sent you about the origins of this, because you see it, you don't see it, I think, I haven't found it, contemporary to biblical culture. You find it later among the Greeks, and then you find it among the Christians.
I think you found it earlier, but I could be wrong.
If you can find it and send it to me, I'd be very interested. Yeah, because I haven't seen it. Okay, any other questions and comments on this before we go further? We still have quite a bit more to see about it, so don't feel like you have to. Sandra.
I'm just wondering, I can understand David having the power, and I mean spiritual power, to give a curse on Yoav.
Yeah.
I don't understand how Yoav can say it. Kill me, it goes back on you.
So I'm going to come back to it. I want to talk more about the curses. I'm just not there yet. It's a good question. We're just not there yet. I will note that there's a Gemara that we'll quote when we get to it, which says, better to be among those who are cursed than those who offer curses. Worth noting. That's going to be in source number 16 on the sheet. But we're not there yet. So I want to talk about a couple of big things here. First of all, Benayahu kills Yoav, and look at the burial. Sentence 34. Vayal Benayahu ben Yehoyada vayifgabo vayimisehu. And Benayahu ben Yehoyada strikes him and kills him. Vayikaver biveso bamidbar. And he was buried in his house in the Midbar, in the wilderness. So first of all, Janine, this may be the basis for Ralbag, because it says he killed him, right? Benayahu killed Yoav, and then it says Vayikaver, and Yoav was buried. So we've switched person here. And it could be that that's where Ralbag is seeing evidence for the idea that Benayahu isn't going to take care of the burial. But what grabs the ear of the commentators is, who lives in a Midbar? What do you mean in his house in the Midbar? He's the leading general of David. He lives in a Midbar. He lives in a wilderness. So the simple read of this is that it doesn't mean an area where nobody lives, a wilderness. Radak says it means an area where his animals went to graze. That's what it means. It was a wild area where his animals would graze. If you remember, slight digression, but worthwhile, Parsha Shmos is coming up a week from Shabbos. Moshe sees Hashem, or sees the burning bush, right? What's he doing right before that? Shmos chapter 3. What's Moshe doing right before that?
He's with the sheep in the desert.
Yes. Vayinhages hatzon achar hamidbar. He led the sheep out in the midbar, in the wilderness. So you have the Medrash on that, that gives you the story about the sheep that's looking for water and it goes running away and Moshe grabs it and picks it up and so on. That Medrash is bothered. Why are you grazing sheep in the desert? That's a bad place to find grass for them. However, the simple read is that no, it's a wild grazing area. That's why Moshe was there with the sheep. And here, that's what he's doing. It's an area where he grazes the animals. It kind of reminds me of Ben-Gurion, right? In Sde Boker, down in the Negev, right? Like, this is, you know, that's the image, I wonder. Ben-Gurion was a lover of Tanakh. I wonder if he made that association. But that's one possibility. Susan, I see your hand, but I'm going to go through this topic first. So that's one explanation. He's buried in his house in the Midbar. It means the area where he grazes the sheep. Okay. Ralbag says it's not his house. It's the place where he belongs. Take a look at source number 10. He says, Shekvar nikbar eitzel beisoba midbar shahayasham. He was buried at his home in the wilderness. That's the simple read. And then he says, O yirtzebazeh, or what it means is, Shehunikbar b'midbar v'hu haya, quote, beito hara'ui lo. He's buried in the wilderness. That's where he deserves to be. Ki lo ya'us le'ish kamohu lios medini. A man like Yoav should not be your neighbor. A man like Yoav doesn't deserve to be within society. Mipnei hargoha anashim b'tachbula u'mirmah. He killed people with trickery. No. He doesn't get to live in society. His rightful place is out in the wilderness. That's Ralbag. Okay? And now you'll see the opposite take. Watch this. Source number 11. Gemara in Sanhedrin. You're going to look at this and be like, what are you talking about? I'm going to explain. Atu beso midbar hu? The Gemara in Sanhedrin, the same Gemara that we've been reading from multiple times about the end of Yoav's career. Well, end of his life. Atu beso midbar hu? His house was a midbar, was a wilderness? Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, kemidbar. Rav Yehuda says, quoting Rav, his house was like the wilderness. Ma midbar mufkar lakol, just like a wilderness is open for anybody to take. Af beso shel Yoav mufkar lakol, his house was open to all. You wanted anything? Come take it. He was a generous man. Davar acher, alternatively, kemidbar, like a wilderness, ma midbar menuka mi gezel va'arayos, abeso shalyov, menuka mi gezel va'arayos. Just like in a wilderness, there's no theft, there's no immorality, there's no people. So too, Yoav, no theft, no immorality in his home. There actually is a Gemara in Ksuvos about immorality in the midbar, but alright, never mind right now. And then they quote you a pasuk from Divrei Hayamim about Yerushalayim, in which we're told V'yoav yechayeh es sha'ar ha'ir. It literally, in context, is talking about building up the defenses of Jerusalem. Yoav built up the defenses of the rest of the city. David was in one part, Yoav was in another part. But Amar Rav Yehuda, says yechayeh doesn't mean to defend; it means to give life. Afilu monini v'tzachanta, or v'tzachnasa, ta'im paris lehu. Even the small fish that he tasted, he put before them. He gave away everything he had for people in need. Yoav was a man of tzedakah, a man of chesed. Supporting this as well, take a look at source number 12. I see the head shake. Don't worry, I'm going to get to it. I really like where this is going. Watch. The Yerushalmi in Makos, source number 12. The Chi Midbar Hayabesov starts with the same question. Was his house a Midbar? Ela Lalamdacha teaches you. Shekevan Shemes Yoav Sar Tziva Yisrael Naasu Yisrael Kamidbar. When Yoav, the general of Israel, died, all Israel became like a wilderness. They had nothing. Yoav was their provider. What does that mean? In Tamar Shahya Bozes Ubonela and Dimusiaus Merchatzos Shevach, if you'll tell me that it was because he would take spoils and use it to build them edifices and bathhouses, that is praiseworthy, that was a good thing. The in Tamar, or if you want, you could say Shahya Bozes, he took spoils, Umachil Chachamim Vitamideyam. He fed scholars and their students Shevach Shevachim. That was the most praiseworthy. At this point, I'll put a plug for end-of-year gifts to the Beit Midrash. But the point here is, and to Mikorot, the point here is that we flip it, and we've suddenly done a 180, and Yoav is the best. He gives things away, he's supporting and keeping people alive, he is awesome. That's your other take here. He doesn't deserve to be in society. He's a dangerous man. He's out in the wilderness. Or he's a benevolent, generous person who takes care of others. And I'm going to come back to this and explain it, but first I'm going to pause because I know there are a lot of head shakes and questions. So I'll take questions just on this point here about burial in the house in the wilderness. And then I'm going to show you what I think is really going on here. So, Rose.
By the second statement. Having said that, we did say that Yoav was a scholar. I mean, we didn't say just a general, we said a scholar.
Yep.
And also, you know, there's a balance between good and evil, right? And that's what we get taught. It's what you choose. So, not that I'm trying to give think, but maybe that's where that other side is now appearing.
Right. It's worth noting.
That's so shocking. It's still...
No, it's true. I mean, people are not one-dimensional. It's possible that he really is both. I'm going to offer you a different take, but for sure you could reconcile them that way. I would agree with that. Esther, I don't know if you're giving the thumbs up or you're putting up your hand with a question. Okay, what's up? So I'm not hearing you well. So I heard almost everything you said except for the last sentence.
Sorry.
That's much better.
Yeah. why not just translate birth from Bevetor as with? So he was just, you know, so his burial place for his family was in the Midbar, and so he was buried. They're like, why this whole controversy around it? Like, to me, the easiest way to translate it would just be that he was buried with his family plot, which is out in the Midbar, not right at their homestead.
So it's an interesting idea for sure. First of all, taking bayits to mean family as opposed to house is already a shift that I'm not sure is so justified. I think that's one consideration. And then second, I once heard a rabbi comment that when they colonize Mars, the first thing there will be a Jewish cemetery because Jews tend to bury as far as possible from home. He was a rabbi who lived in Manhattan, and I know what he's talking about. The cemeteries out on Long Island and all of that. This idea of burial far from home, I think is more seen in our day than it was in their day. I think you'd still ask the question of why is it out in the Midbar? They did bury outside of town. But Midbar, I don't know. I think those are considerations here in how you read it. The simple read of by it really would be house. But I hear your question for sure. Susan, you were waiting, and then Moish.
I sort of come up on the word for Midbar.
Yeah.
Because when we said the Jews wandered in the Midbar.
Yeah.
We meant a desert. So what does it mean, a desert? And the desert and the wilderness are very different. They're not
yes.
the same.
Yeah, I always find this frustrating. The truth is, Midbar means both. Midbar means wilderness. It's an uncontrolled area that is not domesticated. And often that Midbar is a desert, but not necessarily.
So when we say the Jews wandered in the desert, we mean an actual desert. Where here, we mean just a
right.
place where there were not other people.
Right. So you know that it was an actual desert because Hashem describes it in the Torah. Lo mikom zera, it's not a place of planting, and so on. Not to mention we know the geography. Like, you know, we know where it was. But yes, it's confusing. Sometimes Midbar is desert, and sometimes it's just a wild area. True. Moish.
Okay, here's my suggestion.
Yeah.
Vaikavera means that he was buried by his family, hence don't reference anybody. Beveto is the house that they built. The classic is the Bamidbar, because Yoav instructed that, don't bury me on Har Herzl, or in those days, Yer David. People aren't going to come to see me. I don't want them coming to see me just like they see 50 other generals. If they want to come to see me, they got to come to the Midbar. They got to have a real good reason. Whether to criticize me or to give me praise, it's me. It's just about me.
It's an interesting idea. I think it's a little anachronistic, though, in terms of having a Har Herzl for, you know, style thing for generals. I'm not so sure that works. But it's an interesting idea. Points for creativity, as always.
By the way, the Roll Buck is the beginner of the castle culture.
What do you mean?
What he was saying, that he doesn't belong, he doesn't deserve to belong.
Oh, that, yes. Okay.
The castle culture.
So I wanna get to two versions of Yoav that I think are really, really important to understand. Because there are two versions. If I stick with what we've been reading the last couple of months, the opening chapters of Malachim, as seen in Shlomo's condemnation, Yoav is a murderer whose past catches up with him. He got away with it for a really long time, and finally he's done. That's one way to view him. But when you start looking carefully at Yoav's past, I'm not so sure Yoav is fully a villain. Even though he supports Adoniyahu in the end, which, you know, that's bad, definitely. And killing people is bad. We frown on that as a general rule. But think about it. He killed Avner. Avner was the general of Shaul, right? Avner was the one who made Ishbosheth king and is condemned for doing so. He delays the reign of David. The Gemara talks about Avner not in very positive terms. Avner started a bloody civil war in the process. That story with the war game that ends up killing hundreds of people was Avner's idea. Avner is not an innocent man. The Gemara goes through quite a few different possible explanations for why Avner deserved to die. Not deserved to die at Yoav's hand, but deserved to die in general, why Hashem would have wanted Avner to be punished. He killed Avshalom. But as Yoav noted, and I mentioned it before, if you want to look it up, you can see it in Shmuel Bet, chapter 19. It was really demoralizing to the people that David insisted on maintaining his relationship with Avshalom. Earlier on, interestingly, Yoav tried to bring them together, to reconcile between them. And then in the end, he said, you know what? This is wrong. And he killed Amasa. But Amasa was Avshalom's general. He was Avshalom's man. And yes, he came over to David, but Yoav says, I'm not so sure he's loyal. See, in a sense, we have two possible archetypes for two categories of people who kill, effectively. One is named Doeg, and the other one is named Pinchas. You have Doeg. Doeg is a terrible villain. Shaul never punishes Doeg, right? And in Shmuel Bet, chapter 21, Shaul's descendants are punished for what Doeg did in Nov, killing Givon. That whole story, however you read that story, is not our discussion right now. But Shaul's descendants are killed because Shaul never punished Doeg. Shlomo is going to correct that. Shlomo says, I'm going to punish Yoav. And thereby, as he says in sentence 31, my descendants will escape harm. My descendants will not pay for the fact that I let him get away with this. And Binayahu is the new general who is going to be a corrective for Yoav. That's one way to read Yoav. Yoav is a villain. He is a Doeg-style vision villain. He is a Torah scholar, as Doeg was, but he is murderous and bloodthirsty, and Shlomo says, we're not letting that happen on my watch. That's one way to take it. Doeg wasn't a general. Doeg is Rosh Sanhedrin, whatever he is, but he kills the entire city of Nov. Yoav also, though, could be Pinchas, meaning a zealot. He is introduced to us with his brothers Asael and Avishai. Asael tried to kill Avner. Ralbag comments, when Asael tries to kill Avner, the reason why Asael is doing it is because he knows, if I kill Avner, Ishbosheth falls and David is king. So Asael is a kanoi, he's a zealot, he wants to get rid of Avner. He has another brother, Avishai. When David had Shaul at his mercy at the end of Shmuel Aleph, Avishai said, kill him now. And then later on, when David was on the run from Avshalom, Shimi ben Gera comes out and curses David. Up comes Avishai, brother of Yoav, and says, kill Shimi ben Gera. Each time, he wants David to kill somebody for an outrage, and David says, back off, back down. But Asael and Avishai are difficult, difficult people. David says so. David says about them, these are very tough people. And as a zealot, Yoav kills Avner for supporting Shaul, for supporting Ishbosheth. He kills Amasa for supporting Avshalom. As a matter of fact, I'll add a note. I was just reading this morning. Rav Amnon Bazak makes a very interesting suggestion, which I don't think is entirely supported in the text, but it's an interesting suggestion. I mentioned that war game that happened between Avner's people and Yoav's people. It happened in a place called Giv'on. That's where it was. Giv'on is also known as Giv'ah. It's Shaul's home. Suggests Rav Bazak, Yoav started up with Avner's people in Giv'ah because he wanted to bring David there and to take down Ishbosheth. Yoav was taking the initiative, where David didn't want to. David was waiting out Ishbosheth. But Yoav said, we need to charge. You could even argue that Yoav's support for Adoniyahu is a function of his zealotry, a function of his kana'ut. Because remember we said, when we talked about Adoniyahu's revolt and who supported Adoniyahu, we said that there were people who wanted Adoniyahu instead of Shlomo as king because Shlomo was a product of sin. So maybe that's why Yoav supports Adoniyahu. As a zealot, he is dangerous. And so Shlomo kills him and replaces him with the steady Binayahu, who is no zealot, right? He is told, go kill him. And he says, I don't want to kill him. Hey, come out of the Mishkan. Let's go. Let's have a conversation instead. Binayahu is the anti-zealot. So two different ways to look at Yoav. And I think that's what we're seeing in our Midrashim here. First of all, either way, he is presented as a Torah scholar, as is Pinchas, as is Doeg. But his wisdom doesn't change. Doesn't save him. Right? If you take a look on your sheet at source number 15, I brought you the Gemara in Sanhedrin regarding Doeg. I'm not going to go through it now. I just brought it there because it shows how Doeg, for all of his Torah knowledge, is not changed. He doesn't become a good guy. So maybe Yoav is like Doeg. He knows a lot, but it doesn't change him. Or he's a Pinchas. He knows a lot and he is righteous, but he's a threat. And so fundamentally he has to be removed. And now I come back to our Midrashim here. The Midrashim, for the most part, support the read that Yoav is Pinchas. Not all the Midrashim. There's one piece in Sanhedrin 49a that doesn't support it, but as a general principle, they support the idea that Yoav is a Pinchas. You remember the Gemara that we saw? There's a text, there's a pasuk, which says that David does tzedakah u'mishpat, David does righteousness and justice, and Yoav is over the army. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin said, David is only able to perform his righteousness and justice because he has Yoav running the army. The Gemara that we just saw that says that Yoav is generous and he opens his house and he does chesed for everybody and his death leaves the Jews desolate, right? All of that is defending Yoav. And now we come back to the curses. So all these questions that we have, what in the world are you talking about that he was saying to Shlomo, you can't do two things to me. If you're going to kill me, then you have to accept the curses. What is all of this about? The answer is seen in source number 16. Source number 16, the Gemara says that all of the curses that David issued against Yoav can actually be seen to have been fulfilled among David's descendants. This is not a case in which first they said the curse was reversed and then, oh look, we have sentences that show it. They first noticed that actually the curse comes true with David's descendants. Some of them more clearly, some of them less clearly. The ones that are more clear, Uzziyahu, we know, got Tzaraat on his forehead. That's the second one on the list in source number 16. Asa had some kind of problem with his feet, where he couldn't walk. He grips the cane. The one who falls by the sword was Yoshiyahu, right? He was stabbed through 300 times by the forces of Paro Necho. Yechaniah lacks food. He has to be supported by the Babylonians, right? The only one who's not so clear is Rechavam being a Zav. That seems a little bit hard. But once you have the rest, Rechavam has to go along for the ride, so to speak. If you read that Gemara, you'll know why I said the ride. It's a pun. But the point is that the idea here is the Gemara observes, David cursed Yoav, but all the things he said should happen to Yoav actually happened to David's own family. And that's what we're seeing here. Go back to the speech in chapter 2, sentence 33. That I was asked about, and to David, what's that about? What Shlomo is saying, as the Gemara reads it, is the curse is not going to harm my family because I am right. He deserves to die. So therefore, the blood of the people he killed are going to be on Yoav and are going to be on his descendants, just like my father said. And it's not going to be on me, and it's not going to be on our descendants. We're the good guys in this story. That's what Shlomo thinks. Abarbanel points this out, but I think it's obvious in the text. Shlomo is saying, we are in the right. That's the idea. And the Gemara comes back and says, yeah, but apparently not. Because all those curses that were on Yoav's house actually happened to your descendants. And that supports, hang on, Ricky, that supports the view in the Gemara that makes Yoav a Pinchas. Yoav doesn't deserve the curses. He doesn't deserve what David said. And therefore, it ends up rebounding to David's house. Not because Yoav said the curse should be there, but because Yoav didn't deserve to be the victim of such a curse. You follow? That's the idea. So just to sum it up, I know it's 2:26. By the way, just to mention to people, I put it in the email also this week, we have class next week. Our break is going to be for the following two Tuesdays, the 28th and the 4th. But the key points for us to understand here, Yoav is going to die. Benayahu is indeed going to kill him. He's buried in his house in the Midbar. The Midrashim highlight positive aspects for Yoav having his home in the Midbar, and it's part of, really, a second way to look at him. You could just look at him in Malachim and say, this is a terrible person who's being ended, but when you look at him more broadly, and you look at who he killed and why he did it, the sages notice there's another side to him. He could be read as a zealot who ultimately meets his end because he has become a threat. Ricky.
Actually, you answered my first question as to why the curses weren't on David. It's quite extreme, though, isn't it?
Yes. This is a book of extremes. That's the reality. I agree with that.
And also, I wasn't clear if Yoav was buried in his family,
yes,
plot or not.
Yes.
He was.
Yep, that's the emphasis of him being buried with Beito, whether we read Beito as his house or his family.
And I also wrote a note saying that Meir Shalev, if you haven't read him, he's wonderful.
Right, I saw that in the chat. Very interesting.
Beito Bamidbar. Exactly, Beito Bamidbar. Wonderful. I have a lot of the books if you want to borrow any books.
Thank you. Other questions and comments? No? Everyone is tired from the fast? Oh, Sandra.
We always say that Ayahu Ben Yehoyada, and they're always mentioning the father. A few times I noticed it said that Yoav Ben Tsruya, but why is the Ayahu always called,
Yeah. So it's a good question. I think the answer is it goes back to a point that we made a couple of weeks ago, that Benayahu Ben Yehoyada is part of a line of well-known, established associates of the kings, where the one we're talking about now was actually the third one. There was Benayahu Ben Yehoyada, who was a celebrity. Then there was his son, Yehoyada Ben Benayahu, who was a celebrity. And now this is Benayahu Ben Yehoyada. So I think we're highlighting the family line by doing this. And in the fact that they're Kohanim, which, also you identify the lineage. I think that's also an important point here. Moish, you get the last word.
Quick one. It would be fascinating if we had the rules of engagement of the Israeli army during the times of Melech David, because it would be interesting to see, what somebody like Yoav was given to do on an ad hoc basis. If something happens, what do you do?
Yeah.
They couldn't call King David.
Right. It's a good question. I do not know. Thank you very much, everybody. For those who are able to fast, I hope the rest of your fast is okay. And God willing, one more week before the break, in which we will wrap up this chapter and even start on chapter 3, I hope. All right. Be well.
Thank you.
Thank you.